Aloha, everybody. We should say aloha while it's snowing out. That's good. I don't think I put in a slide that said that I have no financial relationships. So it's great to be here. It's also we're talking about mapping and making connections. Mariah was actually in the Peace Corps in Madagascar, and Eric is Finnish by origin, which is where I was when I was a high school student 35 years ago. So, and we all both grew up in California, so everybody's all mapped together. It's very nice to see. So what I'm gonna talk today about is a project that we've been working on for a while in the Pacific Islands. I'd like to start, of course, by thanking people that I work with. I have the fortune to work with amazing people. Some of whom have even come today to support me. Karen Heckert is a colleague of mine at Pacific Seed, as is Michael Ryder, and Hallie Robinette works with me at the University of Hawaii's Cancer Center, which actually changed its name last Friday, and I didn't change the slides yet. And then there should be dozens of names here for all of the cancer leadership in the Pacific that I have the good fortune to work with. And as I go through today and show you how we've been using this mapping tool, then we'll point out the different jurisdictions that I've had the fortune to work with. So I'm not going to, because we only have 15 minutes, I'm not going to go through this whole slide, but please notice that there are a lot of linkages between the different cancer programs and entities. There's a lot of collaboration that goes on. We Pacific Seed are down here at the bottom with the green box, and the Cancer Research Center is attached to it. But please notice at the top that there is leadership that comes from the Pacific, and they serve, the Cancer Council of the Pacific Islands serves as advisors as well as partners with helping to make sure that the projects that we're working on are fitting in with their projects, as well as PIHOA, which is the Pacific Islands Health Officers Association. So again, I'm not going to go into this, but I'd be more than happy to answer questions later on if people have them. Has anybody worked in the Pacific before, besides my colleagues? Have you? Okay. In Indonesia. How about in the U.S. Pacific? Good. Well, I'm just going to go over a little bit about where these places are, and then, you know, when I first moved to Hawaii, my husband and I would go home at night and look on the map, like, where the heck is that? All these places that I had never heard of, Tuvalu and Marshall Islands, and now I get to work there. So I hope that you'll also go home tonight and look on a map where some of these places are. So just to let you know, there are six entities that are associated with the United States, associated, affiliated. There's three flag territories and a commonwealth, flag territories and a commonwealth. We have two territories, which is Guam and American Samoa, so most people have heard about that. The Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, many people know Saipan and the sweatshops. That was certainly a public health social justice issue a few years ago. And then there are three what we call freely associated states: Federated States of Micronesia, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and the Republic of Palau. So these are independent countries that have a seat at the UN. They have presidents, they have a Ministry of Health, but they are associated with the United States, and we have treaties, they call it a compact, with those nations. Again, there's a lot more to be said about that, but just keep in mind that there are six entities that we're talking about. So if you can think of where San Francisco is and then where the Philippines is, there's a lot of space in between. So it's sort of if you were to take the continental United States and put it twice, that's the territory that we look at. So it's about 5 hours to the Hawaiian Islands, and the Marshall Islands, which is the first one that you come to, is about another 5 hours. And then you can see where Federated States of Micronesia are, Republic of Palau, Guam, and CNMI. So I'm going to show you the tourist pictures. Yes, there are some beautiful, beautiful spots there. And again, I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to work there. You'll notice down in the bottom, RMI stands for Republic of the Marshall Islands. That's actually the urban core. They call it the urban core of Majuro. And before I went there, I thought, how can you have an urban core in a, you know, in an island of 30,000 people? But if you go there, it is an urban core. It is very dense, very densely populated, a lot of crucial infrastructure issues there, but it is also glorious. There are a lot of indigenous people in the U.S. Pacific. There are 33 languages that are spoken, so we communicate in English with our colleagues, fortunately. Again, some beautiful shots. You'll see it's some of the islands are quite different. RMI is nothing is more than 10 feet above sea level. That's on top of a bridge. And but rest of the, there are other things look much more like Hawaii with bigger mountains. The whole population that we work with is less than 500,000. So there's a huge amount of land water. Small islands, and then there's certainly, then you could imagine there's a lot of issues of getting between islands. Continental flies between the islands, other little island hoppers between the islands, but certainly getting around in the islands is a big issue. And I showed you all the beautiful pictures, but I don't want you to think that this is a place that really doesn't have some challenges. That actually is an old Japanese tank that's left over from the war. There is unfortunately quite a lot of poverty. There's issues, I mentioned some issues of getting people around, logistics, the geographic distances, also being cut off from a variety of resources. There's most of these territories have a very small amount of spending on health. You can see down here the Purple School is in Majuro and RMI. They have a huge water shortage, so they have these large containers. Infrastructure not very good, but a lot of wonderful people who are really trying to make a difference and working on their country's issues. I also feel inclined to mention the nuclear burden. We're talking about social justice at this conference. Most people are unaware of the amount of bombing that was done in the Marshall Islands between 45 and 57. So I think people have heard of Bravo shot and people knew things like that, but if you just think, it was the equivalent of 1.6 Hiroshima bombs every day for 12 years. And then we went home. So I must say, as an American, I'm not very proud of how we feel like we've dealt with this issue. So it's certainly an ongoing issue, and so I'm very glad that we can be working there, but I hope that people can be learning and remembering about the nuclear legacy that's in the Pacific. So I could tell you lots of stories about great people and interesting projects, but I can encourage you to visit our website. You can certainly contact us. It's a fabulous website, and we have lots of interesting information. And again, I'm more than happy to tell you more pictures. But what I was asked to talk today too about was the assets mapping project that we've been working on. How many people have used assets mapping as a tool? A few people, great. Okay, well, for us it's worked really well, and it's been a great experience. So I brought along just a copy of one of our assets mapping tool. It's a physical piece of paper where the community actually sits down and lists the assets that they have. And one of the reasons that we really like this is because it starts from a position of strength, of looking at the assets that you have. Oftentimes we'll look at something and we'll think, wow, if I had all the money in the world and all the time, that might work, but that's never going to work. And then you start out with this really negative approach. You know, in Hawaii we do that. We do that in lots of places. So this is actually a great way to start looking at the assets that you have. And it also helps point out a lot of assets and resources that you didn't necessarily know that you have. Even in the small places where we work, people say, oh my gosh, I'm always learning about new things. Assets mapping also is then, once you have the basis of what assets exist, you can build much stronger programs. You don't duplicate the wheel, and you can build on what you already have. And also, very importantly, is this aspect of community involvement and ownership, so that people are doing their own research. They're learning about themselves, and they're building their own program. So it's not a we come in from the outside. It's that the people themselves are creating these assets. So what we're looking at in our work was community assets that were related to cancer and health programs. But you know, people can choose whatever assets it is that's relevant. So we were looking at professionals, not only doctors and nurses, but traditional healers, health workers, a variety of different kinds. We were looking at pain management, different services, supports for caregivers, transportation, all of these kinds of issues. What NGOs exist? And as I mentioned before, we thought that assets mapping was really important because of the collaboration, because of how a community will work on its learning about itself. It's something that can constantly be updated, comes from a position of strength, again, avoiding duplications, and it also, importantly, helps teach people about the issue. They have to go through and think about all the different aspects involved in assets mapping, and it can teach them what's going on. So I have great thanks to UCLA for putting their stuff online, because we found a good example there, although I will say I talked my husband into making it look nice. Guam had created a resource inventory, so that was another inspirational for us, and we really wanted it to be user-friendly. And in 2008, in April, we used it at a cancer survivor workshop in Honolulu, where each of the jurisdictions sat at a table and went through starting to look at the resources that they already have. And people really liked that. They thought it was great. And we made a distinction then between things we already have and the top priorities, the T of the to be developed. So we used it in the Federated States of Micronesia to develop what is called the Breast and Cervical Cancer Client Management Guidelines. So they had no guidelines for the country. And this was a four-day meeting that brought people together to determine those guidelines. But really what the tool would do was help people, while they were still at home, figure out what you already have. And then as we work towards creating these guidelines, make sure that it's relevant. And then looking also to see what are the gaps, what linkages. And we were talking about the whole continuum, right? Prevention, early detection, treatment, and care. So these are some of the folks that participated in the workshop, and it was great because you got all the different generations and people working together, and the different islands got together and everybody did their stuff. So it was really good for getting people to work together. We then used it for palliative care. This is just a brief definition of palliative care for those of you that don't work in that. It's the expert relief of suffering, basically from the time of diagnosis, involving the whole family support, and it will help. It can run concurrent to curative treatments, or it can be the only type of care. And it's very important, also because it helps to set goals and clarify what prognosis people have. And in the Pacific, because there basically is no cancer treatment, people travel off island for cancer treatment, palliative care is often the care that can be offered to people. So it's really important that they offer good palliative care. And we come together to, you know, we use this to be, as I'll explain in a minute. So in the Pacific, because there's limited treatment options, limited finances, a lot of people have very late diagnosis when they come, and the community is very intact. There's a huge interest in relieving the suffering, physical, emotional, spiritual suffering, which palliative care looks at, for their loved ones. And people really are cared for at home. So we use this tool in the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, and they were setting out to develop a palliative care program. So we had, if you can imagine, 250 people on an island of about 65,000, so that was a huge turnout. People got together, filled out the form, looking at the gaps, And it was really great also for helping to determine how the health system works, because people had to figure out what is the flow. But it also helped them to determine and to to validate the resources that they have, which is namely very strong family, very strong community, very strong churches. So they began with we have nothing, but as soon as you can put the family and the church into the equation, boy, then they were very wealthy. So they really loved it. All of a sudden they were wealthy in our eyes. We also use this in Palau. This is one of the key palliative care physician. We used it with a number of different populations looking to see what resources do you have. Again, confirming that family is and a strong community are very important assets to build off of. We also just recently did this in the Republic of the Marshall Islands, trying to build a patient navigation system. So looking to see what are the resources that exist as we help people move through the system. And again, people really liked it. This was the Cancer Coalition. Usually they just get free lunch and don't have to work, but I made them work, so they were joking with me. But you can see everybody, the doctors as well as the community members, cancer survivors, the head of or a member from EPA, everybody got together to put down what their results are. So I'm supposed to talk quickly. I've mentioned that, you know, this has been very well received, and we really think that it's been a great tool. Again, getting people to see that families and communities are an asset that you can write down and acknowledge has been really important, and you can look at that for other health programs. Even though these can be very small places, there's things that people don't know that are going on. The Koshrai coordinator, this is an island of 8,000 people, he says, oh, I'm always learning new things that are going on. So, you know, that's always, you know, my favorite story from him. So in terms of implications, I've mentioned some of these before. We really think that this can be used in a lot of different settings. And one of the ways we were looking to use this in Panape was with food. They have a great, very strong project called Local, which is the Local Foods Project, trying to encourage local eating. But they didn't know which restaurants you could go to get good local food. So I was saying, oh, here, you guys could do an assets map. You could actually, you know, put it on the wall and get everybody out there. And so they were really excited about, you know, things like that. So again, I am happy to answer any questions. And it's been a great experience working with these folks. So this is a thank you in the many languages that we get to work with. So thank you very much.